I'll come as soon as I can. She pushes me out the door and walks quickly back inside, her shoulders squared against the coming storm. I stumble back outside into the ludicrous sunshine, feeling like the world's crumbling beneath me. I hold Honey's hand the whole way home, the warmth of her small fingers all that keeps me from falling into the chasm widening under my feet. I tell Sarah the police don't know what happened yet, and she doesn't ask any questions. As we drive on, she grows quiet and distant, and some small part of my mind that's not focused on Jim's death and Jesse's possible involvement worries Sarah is already pulling away from me. I hear the fiddle again as soon as I step out of Mama's car at home. Did Daddy know what was coming? Is that why he's been playing for me? I stand and listen so long, Honey starts yelling my name from the back seat. It takes all my effort to turn my back on those desperate notes and carry my sister into the trailer. After I make some butter noodles for Honey and me to share, we lie together on the couch watching whatever's on PBS. It's just noise to me. Friendly voices driving away the silence and the fear. Honey falls asleep with her thumb in her mouth. I lie next to her, my mind churning over questions I can't answer. Questions I'm afraid to answer. The trailer door bangs open and I bolt upright, my heart racing as I peer through the twilight gloom. Jesse walks in, weaving slightly. I disentangle myself from Honey and lean forward, reaching for him. Where have you been? Jesse pushes past me and staggers to the recliner, sinking into it with a slight groan. Out. Are you high again? I turn on the light, and Jesse winces away. You are high, I snap, trying to keep my voice low. Honey has seen and heard enough today.
So what?
Jesse lies back in the recliner. Do you know about Jim? I say, struggling to keep my voice level. Jesse doesn't say anything. Do you know that Jim is dead? I ask again, then glance at Honey to make sure she's really asleep. Jesse doesn't open his eyes.
Yeah, I know.
Weren't you there with him this morning?
Yeah, but I took off.
The tightness in my chest eases a little bit. Was anyone else there with him when you left? Jesse gives a slight head shake. I wait for him to say more, but of course he doesn't. And you didn't think maybe you ought to come home and help us instead of going out and getting stoned? Jesse finally opens his eyes and crosses his arms.
You seem all right to me.
Have you talked to Mama?
Nope.
The police are going to want to talk to you, I say. You shouldn't have taken off.
Jesse's almost asleep already. He gives a noncommittal grunt.
Headlights flash across the window, and my stomach twists. Get up and go to your room. Mama doesn't need to see you like this. When Jesse doesn't move, I kick the recliner lever down, bringing his chair up so fast he nearly tumbles out.
Damn it,
he snarls, clinging to the armrests. Get your ass up. Now! I grab his arm and yank him as hard as I can. He staggers to his feet, cursing and grumbling.
Fine,
he says, and stumbles down the hall to his room. I hear his door slam, and then his body drop onto the mattress. Mama comes in with slumped shoulders and red eyes, mascara smudged down one cheek. She puts her purse on the kitchen counter and sinks into a chair. Hey, Mama, I say. Hey, baby. She rests her chin in one hand, putting all her weight on her elbow.
I'm surprised the kitchen table doesn't collapse under all that grief. You want something to eat or drink? I ask. And she shakes her head. I go to the sink and fill a glass of water anyway. When I set it down in front of her, she reaches for it and takes a few sips. Thank you. I made some dinner for Honey and me. I put a plate in the fridge for you. She doesn't say anything, so I get it out and put it in the microwave. She stares into space, like she forgot I'm here. When I set the plate in front of her, she automatically starts eating. But I know she's not tasting the food. After a few bites, she pushes the plate away. Where's Honey? She asks absently. She's on the couch over there, sleeping. I'll put her to bed in a minute. Mama nods, and I'm afraid she's going to disappear back inside herself. So I force a question out, even though I already heard enough at the police station to know. What happened to Jim? She doesn't look at me. Just keeps staring ahead, seeing nothing. At least nothing in this room. Mama, someone hit him from behind with a hammer. Her face pales. Hearing it again makes me nauseous. Who would do that? Mama shakes her head. Then she looks up at me. Her eyes haunted. Why do the men I love keep dying? You think I'm cursed? Of course not. I sit at the table next to her and put my hand on hers. You're not cursed, Mama. You've just had some bad luck. Ain't that the same thing? Tears are streaming down her cheeks now. And I feel my own eyes begin to smart. She glances out the window toward the pines. I think it's these woods. I didn't get far enough away. They came for Jim, too. You're not making any sense. It's a coincidence they both died, I say. And I know I'm trying to convince myself, too. I reach over and pull some paper towels from the roll on the table. Here, I say, handing them to her. Though I know I hate wiping my nose with rough paper like that. You seen Jesse? She asks after she blows her nose. He's in his room. She nods. She looks lost. So lost. Like she'll never find her way home again. And I can't go with her. Can't lead her back to us. Even if I could, I don't have a map to her grief. That's the thing about losing someone. It's a landscape no one's familiar with, and it's never the same for two people. We're all alone in our loss. Without a map. Without a companion. It's the loneliest thing there is. Did Daddy really beat up Frank once? Is that why Frank's nose looks like that? I ask, trying to change the subject. Mama nods. Frank made a pass at Ina back when she was just starting college. She wasn't interested. But Frank wouldn't leave her be. Your daddy. He couldn't bear to see her treated that way. Not after his father. She breaks off and closes her eyes. After his father what? Baby. I don't want to dredge up all that ancient history. A low buzzing against the window catches our attention. A wasp is flying there, fumbling against the glass. Mama shudders. A memory crawls across my skin, but I bat it away. I keep thinking about how Jesse beat up Kenneth yesterday, I say. The way he climbed on top of him and beat him till his face was all bloody. When it happened, I was so busy trying to get Jesse off Kenneth, I didn't really think about how scary and awful it was. But now the memory makes me queasy. When Mama doesn't say anything, I finally ask the question that's been eating at me all afternoon. Did the police think Jesse killed Jim? Mama closes her eyes, as if against a wave of pain. But then she gazes up at me, her eyes ringed with dark circles. You gotta stand by your brother, no matter what. You hear me? Are you saying he, Shady Grove? Jesse ain't never done anything but look out for you. It might be your turn to look after him. No matter what. That's what brothers and sisters do. Her lost look is gone now. She grabs my chin and holds my eyes with hers. You hear me? Tears roll down my cheeks, clogging my throat. I hear you. Daddy always told Jesse that taking care of me was Jesse's biggest responsibility, the most important job in his whole life. Mama's right. Whether Jesse is guilty or not, it might be my turn to take care of him now. 8. I step onto the school bus at 7 a.m. 2 days later. And there are already eyes on me. Eyes and whispers. Jim's death was on the news last night, along with the reported cause of foul play, which is the strangest expression. Foul play. What's playful about murder? The reporter said the police were considering several possible leads, but I haven't heard any specifics. The detectives questioned me with Mama present, asking what Jim was like at home and how Jesse and I got along with him. I told the truth, but I softened it a little to make it seem like things weren't quite as bad between Jim and Jesse as they really were. The police interrogated Jesse for a long time yesterday, and they asked him to come back again today instead of going to school. But I can't let myself believe Jesse had anything to do with it. He and Jim had been fighting a lot lately, but Jesse wouldn't kill anyone, not even Jim. It must have been someone else, maybe another construction worker. Jim was never well liked at work. Too short a temper, too sharp a tongue. Orlando called 3 times to see if we needed anything, but I haven't heard from Sarah since she dropped me at my car after the police station. Maybe she doesn't know what to say, or is afraid of trespassing somehow. But her silence feels all too familiar. I find a seat in the 2nd row of the bus so I won't have to meet all those eyes. I put my earbuds in and stare out the window, anxious about going to school, but relieved to be getting out of the house, away from Mama's grief and the people who keep dropping by with casseroles and questions I'm not allowed to hear the answers to. I offered to stay home to watch Honey, but Mama told me to go. Said someone else would drop my sister off at daycare. The field rolls by, a morning mist still on it. The cows not yet out to graze. When the bus passes by my lightning-struck tree, its white, twisted branches seem to reach for me like always. Yet against the watery gray of the sky, the tree looks eerie, otherworldly, like another ghost in my world of lost souls. Maybe it's Jim's death, or my fear for Jesse, or maybe it's because the Shadow Man won't stop haunting my dreams. But today the oak tree isn't comforting. Instead, the sight of it makes me feel lonely and lost, and a little bit afraid. Today, surviving lightning doesn't feel like enough. The first person I see when I get off the bus is Cedar Smith, leaning against the brick wall like he owns it. Even off the stage, he looks like an old country musician. A real one. Not like the new ones that are hardly more than pop singers wearing cowboy hats. I eye him from a distance. Brown cowboy boots. Not the showy kind. Just serviceable work boots. Dark Wranglers. A big belt buckle. A plaid button-up with glossy buttons. And some kind of star design on the shoulders. I always thought his clothes were all for show. But now that I've heard him play, I see the clothes are well-earned. He probably thinks Jesse and I are trashy after the fight at the open mic. And maybe worse if he's heard about Jim. The thought of speaking to Cedar makes me want to sink into the earth. But when I get close, I say hello and give him half a smile. To my surprise, he detaches himself from the wall and walks with me. Shady, right? I nod, and he smiles.
I'm Cedar, if you didn't know.
I know, is all I can manage to say. I suspect he's about to ask about Jim and Jesse, but he doesn't. I force myself to say something else. Thanks for helping me Friday night. With Kenneth, I mean. Cedar shakes his head.
That's all right. That boy can't walk 5 feet without coming across someone who wants to beat his ass.
I laugh. The first time I've laughed in 2 days. But then, I remember how beating up Kenneth makes Jesse look. How it might make him seem guilty of killing Jim.
Ken is one of my best friends, but God, he's got a mouth on him.
When I don't say anything, Cedar starts talking again.
Y'all were really good Friday night. At the open mic, I mean. You played that fiddle like it was growing out of your arm.
He says with no attempt to hide the drawl we all inherited from our parents. Really? I glance up at him, distracted from thoughts of Jesse. That's not really the kind of music I like to play. Never feels quite right.
What kind of music do you like?
Cedar asks, smiling again when he catches sight of the blush spreading across my cheeks.
I always wondered, since I'd see you toting that fiddle around school. Thought maybe you played classical or something.
I like the same kind of music you do, I say, screwing up my courage. I think his arrogance is making me bold. That's what I was raised on. Actually, I was named after the song you played. My whole first name's Shady Grove.
No kidding,
Cedar says with a short laugh. His eyes crinkle at the corners.
How'd we do then, playing your namesake?
I can tell he knows exactly how well they played. And if it were any other boy playing any other song, I'd probably put a stop to his peacocking. It was almost as beautiful as the way my daddy used to play it, I say. Almost.
He died?
Cedar asks, and I nod.
I'm sorry. That's awful.
Cedar clears his throat.
Kenneth told me about your stepdad. About what happened.
There it is. I'm amazed he waited this long to bring it up. Is Kenneth okay?
It's been a rough couple of days for him. Yeah. He's upset, but he seems all right. I guess they weren't really close. He's not coming to school today, though.
No, they weren't close, I say. That probably makes his dad's death even worse.
Did you like him? Or did you hate him like most people hate their stepdads? You met him the other night, I say, as if that's all the answer Cedar needs. A few weeks ago, I would have said I hated Jim. His impatience, his rough manners, his insistence on watching NASCAR all the damn time. But I saw a whole different side of Jim at the hospital on Friday. Something soft underneath all those hard angles. I don't know. He could be all right sometimes. I mostly feel bad for my little sister. He's her dad.
Yeah,
Cedar says. But we're at my classroom now. My hand already on the door handle.
Listen, he says. I didn't really mean to talk to you about everybody dying. I'm sorry about that. I only wanted to tell you how well you played.
I turned to him. Maybe next time we can talk about something a little happier. He smiles.
I'd like that. See you later, Shady Grove, he says.
And then he winks at me. And despite everything going on, despite the fact that he's a rodeo boy with an ego the size of Texas, I feel that wink all the way down to my toes. And then I'm watching his very finely made backside wander off down the hall, and I can't find a single mocking thing to say about those Wranglers. Hey, I hear, and turn to see Sarah staring at me. She looks between me and Cedar's retreating form, her face unreadable. We were only talking about Kenneth, I say, feeling defensive for no good reason. Okay. She crosses her arms and glances away. I don't know what I expected after our kiss, but it wasn't this. She doesn't know what to say, where to look. Did she change her mind about me after Jim's murder? Does she regret the kiss? Is that why she didn't reach out to me all weekend? Because her silence felt like it was saying something, even if she didn't mean it to. I can tell she's about to ask if we know who killed Jim, and I don't want to talk about it. She doesn't really deserve to hear me talk about it after ignoring me all weekend. I yank open the classroom door and head inside, my anger a sudden roar in my head. Sarah sits in the desk next to mine, and I can feel her eyes on me. When she finally speaks, her voice is tentative. I thought about texting you, but I didn't want to bother you. I thought you'd be busy with your family and everything. She's embarrassed. Maybe a little ashamed of herself. I'm mad at her, but I give her a weak smile and nod. I know she's doing her best, but it's not enough. Not today. She doesn't try to say anything else, so I stare at the words in my book until class starts, thinking not of Spanish verb conjugations, but of Jim's murder and Sarah's silence. The wail of a fiddle in the woods, and a welcome distraction. The way Cedar's eyes crinkle when he smiles. The school bus door closes behind me, and I start home with leaden feet. Once the rattling of the bus windows disappears down the road, I can hear the shouting coming from home. Mostly male voices, loud and angry sounding. But then there's a shrill scream I recognize as Honey's, and I'm running, dirt clods flying behind me. Through the trees, red and blue lights spin lazily, and the world feels like those lights, too bright and dizzying, utterly disorienting. Two police officers are grappling with Jesse, their limbs tangled with his. All three of them sounded like a lot of bulls trying to kick their way out of a stall. Jesse's fighting hard. But they are big, burly men, and they soon slam him against the car and rest his arms behind his back, slapping cuffs on his wrists. Jesse goes limp, like he's given up and given in.
resigned to whatever comes next. They slide him into the back seat of the car and slam the door on him. He stares at me through the window. And he doesn't look afraid or angry like he should. He looks ashamed.
Shady, 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 shady!
Honey is screaming. And I look over in time to see her rip herself from Mama's arms. She runs to me and wraps her hands around my legs, sobbing into my jeans. Mama's face is hard and unreadable as a slab of stone. One of the officers turns from Jesse, and I realize it's Kenneth's stepdad, Gary. I've seen him drop Kenneth off at school a few times. He probably handled Jesse extra rough for Kenneth's sake. Gary goes over to Mama and talks to her for a minute. Puts a slip of paper in her hands. If she understands him, she makes no indication. He pats her on the shoulder and gets back into the car. They back out onto the dirt road. Jesse's still staring out the window, watching his home and family recede from him like the tide. Honey's cries have died to a shuddering sob against my legs. And Mama's still standing where the cop left her, staring at the place the car had been moments before. Dust is all that's left of what just happened. I pick up Honey and sling her to one hip, and then walk over to Mama and take her arm. Her eyes clear for a moment, and she lets me lead her up the steps and into the trailer. There's a lamp broken on the carpet, and several books and DVD cases lie strewn around it. I guide Mama over to the couch and make her sit down and put Honey next to her. My little sister lies down with her head in Mama's lap. Mama smooths Honey's hair absentmindedly, and Honey puts her thumb into her mouth and closes her eyes. She'll fall asleep if we leave her like that. I sit down too. What happened? Mama's face looks so tired, like she's living every hour twice. She shakes her head. They say he killed Jim. She speaks like she's reciting a well-known liturgy, the words flat and empty of meaning. His fingerprints were on the hammer. Two of the workers saw him arguing with Jim that morning before they left for lunch. He disappeared from the work site and wasn't seen again. No, no, no. So what? I say, pushing down my panic. He worked there, so it's not crazy he would have used the hammer. And they are always arguing. It's what they do. What they did. How do we know those workers aren't lying? Why aren't the cops investigating them? All those guys hated Jim. My panic seems to wake Mama up, and she finally talks normally. The police did, baby. They looked into both of the workers who were there that morning, plus a dozen more. Everything led back to Jesse. Well, couldn't there be other suspects? A customer? Or maybe someone who got fired? But Mama shakes her head. Only Jesse. They've dismissed every other lead. They're wrong. They'll figure it out eventually. We just need to make them understand. My voice breaks on the last word, a sob lodging in my throat. Mama's eyes meet mine. There's too much evidence against him. I shake my head to clear it. No. Jesse gets mad, but he wouldn't kill someone. It has to be someone else. He didn't do it. I hope not, Mama says. But even if he did, he's still your brother. When I don't respond, Mama settles her eyes on mine. You support your family even when they've done wrong. If you love them, you do. No matter what they've done, no matter what they've done. The words almost knock the wind out of me. Mama's already given up on Jesse's innocence. I shake my head and back away from her, straight into the trailer's front door. I can't breathe. Can't breathe. I stumble outside to the edge of the trees, so lightheaded, I think I might faint. Black dots edge into my vision, and nausea roars in my gut. But the moment I lean against a skinny pine tree for support, the wail of a fiddle cuts through my shock. I snap to attention. The perfect hair-raising note sears away the fog in my mind, replacing it with an electric certainty. It wasn't Jim's death Daddy was warning me about. It was Jesse's being arrested. He knew it was coming. He knew I would need his help. I don't know what Jesse's done, but I know what I need to do. Once Mama goes to her room to lie down, I take her keys from their hook. I climb into her car and head for Aunt Ina's just as the first star winks in the deep blue sky. I'm going to find Daddy's fiddle tonight. I knock hard at Aunt Ina's door until she opens it, her eyes frightened. "What is it? What's happened?" she says, standing back to let me in. I walk deep into the house, all the way to the little parlor off the kitchen, where Daddy liked to play in the evenings. Aunt Ina follows close behind. I turn and face her. "Where is it, Aunt Ina?"
"Where's what?"
"The fiddle."
"I told you those were echoes you were hearing. It's gone."
"I've heard it. Over and over again, I've heard it. Here, in the woods. It sounds just the way it did when Daddy played it. I know it's him. I know it's his fiddle."
"Shady, your daddy's dead."
"Nobody's ever dead around here."
"Well, the fiddle's gone. And even if it weren't, I know your daddy wouldn't want you to have it. He wouldn't want you to play it."
"He does. He's been reaching out to me, trying to show me where it is." Aunt Ina shakes her head.
"He wouldn't. I promise you. If I know anything in this world, it's that William wouldn't want you playing that fiddle."
"Aunt Ina, the fiddle was meant for me. Daddy said it would be mine when he was gone. My responsibility."
"Your burden, you mean? That fiddle is nothing but a burden. I'll die before I help you find it."
Her words jolt through me. "So you admit it's still out there? It's not gone?" She shakes her head. "I try a different approach. Jesse was arrested today. He's being taken to jail for killing Jim."
"Arrested?"
she asks, taken aback. And I realize I should have called her. She's often the last to hear news, cooped up in this house. Her mouth twists with sudden emotion, but then settles into a hard line.
"That's terrible. But it doesn't explain why you're here. What does Jesse being arrested have to do with William's fiddle?"
"If I can find the fiddle and raise Jim's ghost, I can learn the truth." It sounds outrageous coming from my mouth, but I can't take it back now. I cross my arms and stare at Aunt Ina, masking my doubt with defiance. Her face registers surprise, but she recovers quickly, staring back at me with equal defiance and a lot less doubt.
"Sometimes, learning the truth doesn't give you what you want."
Her voice is full of pity, but her words make me reel back from her like she slapped me.
"You think he did it? You think Jesse killed Jim?"
She stares at me for a long time.
"You do."
I shake my head,
I can't let that thought in. Can't give it room to grow. I spin away from her and dart my eyes all over the room. Where'd you hide it? I'll find it. You know I will. You may as well tell me. Daddy's going to show me where it is anyway. You ever think maybe it's not your daddy leading you to the fiddle? You ever think maybe there's a darkness in the woods? Or maybe a darkness that's in you? She's advancing on me now, angrier than I've ever seen her. Don't you remember your dreams? Don't you remember the dark man in them? The little dead girl in your ceiling? Don't you remember, Shady? Aunt Ina is shaking. I step back from her, then turn and pace the room. I don't want to think about the dead girl. She never threatened me like the shadow man does. But she was worse somehow. More unbearable. She clung to the ceiling above my bed, almost featureless, except for her white dress. But she gave off fear in waves, filling the room. The memory of her makes my chest feel tight. So I turn my thoughts back to the fiddle. I run my hand over the walls of the parlor, searching for, I don't know what, a hidden compartment? I pick up a child-sized teapot from the fireplace mantle, checking the wall behind it. You think I'd keep a cursed thing like that fiddle in my house? Aunt Ina spits, snatching the teapot away from me and cradling it in the crook of her arm. The fiddle's not here. Tell me where it is, I say. If you love me at all, you'll tell me. I do love you. That's why I want you to leave this be. Go home. Help your mama take care of your baby sister. Well, you've got her. Aunt Ina's voice cracks. And what about Jesse? Who's going to take care of him? I don't know, Aunt Ina says tiredly. The Lord, I guess. If he looks after any of us. I turn on my heel and stalk from the parlor, straight to the front door. I slam it behind me as hard as I can, so hard the windows rattle in their frames. The ghosts press up against the house, spilling into the driveway and the forest, thick as the humid night air. I wait around until the second coming. But me, I'm done waiting. I won't wait around for justice to be done, for Jesse to be proved guilty or innocent. I'll find a way to learn the truth. 9. The viewing room is surprisingly crowded. I guess in the South, even people like Jim get large turnouts when they die. We're all too polite to stay home. Well, that's the generous answer. A more accurate answer might be that people are here to gossip, to whisper, to speculate. Sure, some are here to grieve. Mama in the same black dress she wore to Daddy's funeral. Jim's mother, who clutches the edge of the open coffin like a captain clutching the helm of a sinking ship, her knuckles bone white. Frank, who looks angry now rather than sad, as if he can shout Jim out of the coffin. His face softens only when someone comes to shake his hand or hug him. It's strange how well-liked he is in town when you consider he's related to Jim. Men look him in the eye like he's someone important, and women smile at him like he's a catch, while his wife looks on, quiet at his side, a perfectly demure southern lady. Several guys from the construction company came to pay their respects, and I wonder if they're here for Jim's sake or for Frank's. Pedro Flores, a contractor who installs HVACs in Frank's houses, came and brought his son Juan, who's a friend of Orlando's.
Mr. Flores hugs both Mama and me and says Jim was a good man. I thought everyone at work hated Jim, but Mr. Flores seems sincere. We can only stay for a few minutes. Will you be all right? Is Orlando here? Juan asks. I shake my head. He offered to come for moral support, but I told him I'd be fine on my own. I guess I thought I'd manage better that way. If Sarah had asked, I might have said yes. But she didn't offer. Which really shouldn't surprise me at this point. But it does. And my anger at her boils quietly underneath everything else I'm feeling. Juan seems to sense my misery and gives me a quick hug. Take care, Shady, he says. See you at school. I wave goodbye to Mr. Flores and turn back to survey the room, loneliness settling over me. Everyone here looks natural and at ease, as if milling around a dead body while exchanging pleasantries happens every day. But to me, this is a creepy and unnecessary funeral tradition. Why would you want people to have to look at the empty shell who used to be a person they loved? I suppose if it's someone you hated, looking at them defeated and empty in a coffin might offer a sort of pleasure. But what good is there in it for those of us who just lived with the person, shared a home, moved in each other's orbit, not because we wanted to, but because that's where our orbits happened to be. I wish I had taken Orlando up on his offer to come. He could have been a kind of buffer for me. Instead, I take Honey from Mama's arms and make her my buffer, trying to keep her entertained and safe from the overly tearful old women who want to shower her with kisses and germs. I try not to think about it. But this wake reminds me horribly of Daddy's. Of seeing his body laid out, unnaturally still. Looking all wrong in a suit when he only ever wore jeans and work boots. I wanted to scream at him to wake up. To get out of that coffin and go home with us. But all I could do was sit in a chair and weep until my eyes were nearly swollen closed. Feeling more alone than I ever had before. I wonder if that's how Kenneth is feeling now. I think about going to talk to him, but I can't bring myself to walk over there. He sits in a corner with his hands in his lap, for once too stunned to speak. His mother sits beside him, messing around on her phone, like she'd rather be pretty much anywhere else on earth. She doesn't look the least bit sad. I guess her and Jim's divorce was pretty nasty. I heard him refer to her as a grasping shrew on more than one occasion, although I don't imagine he behaved much better himself. Still, you'd think she'd try a little harder for her son's sake. Her new husband, Gary, has been standing out front smoking all morning, like he's afraid to come inside. I was surprised he came at all, since he and Jim despised each other. But I guess he is Kenneth's stepdad, as well as Frank's friend, so it makes sense. Plus, he's a police officer. So he's going to lead the funeral procession to the graveyard later. But having the cop who arrested Jesse here really isn't helping me and Mama. At least Honey's too young to know what's happening. I've kept her away from the coffin because no little kid needs a memory like that buried deep in their mind. A memory they'll dig up one day in therapy or unexpectedly when their dog dies or something. It's bad enough that people keep coming over and touching her face or shaking her little hand. Their face is full of pity. I remember them all from Daddy's funeral, and hate them even more than I did back then. I hate their cliche, in a better place speeches, in their Sunday best clothes. I hate their talk about God's love and forgiveness. Most of all, I hate their unwavering belief in Jesse's guilt. I'm wrapped in my own web of anger when Cedar walks in. At first, I don't even recognize him. He's bareheaded and wearing a dark suit, without a single embellishment on it. He looks stripped down somehow, pulled out of context. I stare at him for a long time, trying to process it. But he's looking around and catches sight of me, and a blush spreads up my neck. Mama thinks she's cursed with dead husbands, but I know I'm cursed to blush every time I get near this fool boy.
"Hey, Shady," Cedar says when he reaches me. "Sorry about all this."
He doesn't say anything about Jesse. I could hug him for it.
"Is this your little sister?"
Honey's head is against my shoulder, her arms wrapped around my neck. She's almost asleep. "Yeah, she's about tuckered out." Cedar smiles at her.
"She looks like Kenneth a little bit."
He glances back at me with a sly smile.
"Thankfully, though, she looks more like you."
Is Cedar Smith seriously flirting with me at a funeral? "Thanks," is all I say. Kenneth's over there in the corner. I motion with my head. "It was really nice of you to come and be with him." Cedar ducks his head.
"I'll go find him. See you later."
He touches my arm as he passes by, and it's the first thing I've really, truly felt since the police dragged Jesse away yesterday. I watch as Kenneth's eyes brighten when he catches sight of Cedar. He stands and grips him in a bear hug, almost lifting Cedar off the ground. Once Honey finally falls asleep, I pass her over to Aunt Ina and go to the bathroom to escape the whispering voices, red velvet, and the coffin at the far end of the room that draws people like moths to a front porch light. They can throw themselves at it and feel the electric zap if that's what they need. But I want some quiet and solitude. But of course, there's a line for the toilet. I'm about to turn around and find another place to hide when I hear Jesse's name. Two elderly ladies in line are talking about him. I edge a little closer without letting them notice me.
"You know what I think?"
says a voice like the creak of a screen door.
"I think if it turns out he really did kill Jim, they ought to reopen William's case. Maybe he killed him too. William died in a car accident. So? The boy was with him, wasn't he? But Jesse would have only been a kid. He was a strange child, the way he stared at his daddy sometimes."
She fakes a shiver, and I recognize her. Our closest neighbor growing up, Miss Patty, who seemed old even back then. She's ancient now, but still every bit as vile. She was always coming around the house with pamphlets from her Pentecostal church, usually with flames on the covers. She'd talk to us about heaven and hell and fighting off demons. Daddy would get so mad at her he could barely hold his temper. Now my own temper is rising. Daddy's death was an accident, and Jesse was never a suspect because there was nothing to be suspected of. He was a deer in the road. Jesse might have survivor's guilt, but that's all. I can't believe she would say such horrible things.
"Oh, that house was full of sin, full of the devil,"
Miss Patty goes on.
I don't know how many times I told them they needed an exorcism. Of course, it started years ago when William and Ina's parents first moved in. It was his mama that started it all. She was some kind of psychic. I told her it wasn't good Christian spirits she was consulting with. It was devils. Oh, that house was so dark. So wrong. I've heard stories about that place,
the other woman whispers. I don't recognize her, but that's the way things are around here. People always seem to know you, even if you haven't the faintest idea who they are. Miss Patty shakes her head.
I swear I saw a pair of red eyes looking at me from a top window one time. It's no wonder their boy Jesse turned out so wrong. What about the girl, the one with the strange name? Shady Grove? She's a good girl from what I hear. Her mama must have gotten her out of that house just in time, before the devils got hold of her.
I've heard about all I can stand, so I clear my throat, and both ladies look up. Miss Patty isn't the slightest bit embarrassed to have been caught talking about my family, but the other woman goes rigid.
I'm so sorry for your loss,
she says in a sugar-sweet voice. I'm not even going to try to be polite. I turn the full force of my pent-up fury on Miss Patty. My brother did not kill anyone, I say. And our house was not awful. You are, you bitter old hag. I spin on my heel and stalk back into the crowd before she can answer. Aunt Ina catches my arm as I pass. Honey is draped across her chest, asleep.
Funeral gossip's getting to you?
I haven't talked to her since our fight. My voice comes out brittle when I speak. How'd you know?
I hear them too.
All kinds of rumors flying around. Folks think this is CSI. I don't know what that is, I say. And Ina rolls her eyes.
Darling, I'm sorry about our argument. I don't want to fight with you,
Ina says, reaching for my hand. Aunt Ina is one of the most important people in my life, and I should never have spoken to her the way I did, no matter how upset I was. I squeeze her fingers. I'm sorry, too. Aunt Ina smiles up at me, her blue eyes glistening.
Can we leave that subject be, then? Can we forget about it?
Her voice trembles. I can't forget about it. But we don't have to talk about it now. I nod and change the subject. I just heard Miss Patty say she thought Jesse killed Daddy, as well as Jim, and that our house was evil. Aunt Ina shakes her head.
She still comes around the house with her tracks sometimes. Loves talking about the devil so much. It makes you wonder. But why would she say that about Jesse?
I don't want to let everyone else's doubt, Mama's, Aunt Ina's, now Miss Patty's, chip away at my faith in Jesse. But maybe my faith was shaky to begin with. After all, he was the first person I thought of when Aunt Ina told me Jim was killed. All those fights he had with Jim. How Jesse snapped when Kenneth whispered something to him. Aunt Ina gazes at me, studying my face.
You know your daddy and Jesse didn't have an easy relationship.
But that doesn't mean... From behind me comes a loud, anguished voice. I turn and see Frank looming over Mama. I don't know what he just said, but his arms are crossed and there are tears on his face. Mama's leaning away from him like a skinny new tree bending in the wind. Nothing like how she was at the police station the night Jim died. Jesse's arrest and all the police tramping in and out of the house took more out of her than I realized. They only questioned me once, and that was bad enough. Mama's been through hell. I guess Frank isn't faring much better. He's never acted like this before. Go rescue her. I'll keep hold of Honey, Aunt Ina says. I cross the room and head straight for Mama, who I can see is crying, the tears leaking from her eyes, forming rivulets of mascara. I don't think she even knows she's crying anymore. She doesn't try to wipe them away.
That piece of shit son of yours killed my brother, and all you've got to say for yourself is that you're sorry?
Frank bellows before he catches sight of me heading their way. He has the decency to look ashamed of himself.
I'm just talking to your mama, Shady. It's not your concern,
he says gently. You're yelling at my mama, so it is my concern, I say, coming to stand next to her. Shady, she says. Don't. No, I tell her. Your husband just died, and he has no right to be yelling at you a few feet away from Jim's body.
He was my brother,
Frank growls, but his voice breaks on the last syllable. A few heads turn to look at us, but I don't care.
And Jesse is mine, and he didn't kill Jim.
I growl right back, my anger displacing my doubts. I know you're upset about Jim's death, but if you don't get out of my mama's face, I'm gonna call security. Before Frank can respond, Kenneth is standing between us, one hand on his uncle's chest. He's nearly as tall as Frank is, his hands almost as big as his uncle's.
Please don't make a scene at my daddy's funeral,
Kenneth says quietly, more seriously than he's ever said anything in his life. He looks between Frank and me, and I almost regret losing my temper.
Don't you care he killed your daddy?
Frank asks Kenneth, his voice hoarse with grief and anger.
You're that sorry you don't even care?
A tear trickles down Frank's cheek. Kenneth's cheeks flush red, and he wipes the back of his hand over his moist eyes. I wince, wondering if his bruises still hurt.
Whatever Jesse did or didn't do ain't their fault, Uncle Frank. They're just here trying to grieve, same as you. I wish we still hanged people,
Frank mumbles, before Kenneth pulls him away, their arms wrapped around each other. His words knife through me. I haven't really let myself consider all the consequences of Jesse being blamed for Jim's murder. Florida doesn't hang people anymore, though we do still have the death penalty. But not for teenagers, right? You're safe from that, at least. Frank is so sure it was Jesse. So sure he wants to see Jesse die. What if I'm the only one who's wrong to trust in Jesse's innocence? Now's not the time for these thoughts. Mama's body sags with relief once Frank leaves the room, and I put my arm around her. I can't believe we haven't even made it to the surface. She drops her face into her hands and rubs it tiredly. It's only another half hour. We're almost done. Come on with me, and we'll look at Jim's body one more time, she says, squaring her shoulders. When I don't move my feet to go with her, Mama gazes at me. You haven't paid your respects yet. I didn't want Honey to see, I say, avoiding the truth. Come on, baby. This is part of it. You can't turn your face from death 'cause it's always gonna find you. I let her lead me toward the casket, and the crowd parts around us. Even Jim's mother moves away from the coffin when we approach. Jim was her favorite son. In her eyes, nothing he did was ever wrong, and no one gave Jim half of what he deserved. So of course she doesn't think Mama deserved Jim, and Mama can't stand the woman for it. She doesn't even glance at her mother-in-law now. "Look," Mama says. She reaches into the coffin and touches Jim's hand. I force my eyes to his face. People always say the dead look like they're sleeping, but Jim looks like nothing. He is a wax figure of his former self. His hands are folded across his chest, and his eyes are closed. But if you look carefully, you can tell they are glued. I feel bile rising up my throat, but I force it back down. I try to cover up the revulsion I feel before Mama sees it. But when I look over, her eyes are locked on Jim's face, like she's searching the body for traces of the man she loved. Maybe the body means different things to some people than it does to me. Maybe one day I'll love someone romantically, and they'll die. And I'll want to touch their corpse. I'll still love the body even though it's empty. But I have lived all my life with the whispers of the dead, so I'm not fooled by the embalmer's tricks. Jim's body doesn't matter now. Only his ghost could tell us what we need to know. Mama asked me to play my fiddle while the pallbearers bring Jim up the aisle. She requested, "Go rest high on that mountain," probably because every local funeral anyone's been to since 1995 includes it. I stand alone at the front of the funeral home chapel, close my eyes, and play. I don't care anything about this song, but I want to do right by Mama. As the song soars across the chapel, making old ladies weep, I remember how it felt to watch Daddy's coffin borne up this same aisle, with Jim and Jesse at the front, each bearing Daddy's weight with a skinny arm. They both looked guilty, shamefaced, like it ought to be their bodies going up the aisle. I thought maybe people at funerals always looked like that, half guilty to still be alive while the one they love isn't. But when I open my eyes, I see Jim's pallbearers. Most of them look stunned, as if Jim's murder has reminded them of their own waiting deaths, their own inevitable fates. Kenneth's face is only lost and grieved. Frank's grim and determined. When the coffin reaches the front of the church, Frank glares at me for a moment before he turns. There's so much accusation in his gaze. I feel a stab of shame, as if Jim's blood is somehow on my hands. Is everyone going to look at me like that now? With either pity or suspicion? As if I'm either a victim or an accomplice in my brother's crimes? I don't know what's true, who's to blame. But I do know that despite what this song's lyrics say, Jim's work on earth isn't done. And there won't be any rest for him, or for me, especially once Daddy's fiddle is in my hands. When I left Aunt Ina's house after our argument, I swore to myself I wouldn't wait around like the ghosts. I'd find the fiddle and learn the truth on my own. But in the time that has passed since I made that promise, I keep wondering if I'm no better than the ghosts. Maybe I'm waiting for someone else to do justice. Someone else to prove Jesse's innocence. To set him free. Because no matter how many times I insist Jesse isn't guilty, maybe deep down I'm afraid justice might not be in Jesse's favor.
Maybe I'm afraid to be the one who ties the noose around his neck.
10. I don't see Cedar again at the funeral, but the next morning, I hear him shout my name from down the hallway between classes. I turn at his voice, and he comes running up to me, smiling that cocky smile of his. He throws an arm over my shoulders like we're old friends.
Listen, your fiddle playing was amazing yesterday. Even better than at the open mic night.
Thank you.
Rose will probably kill me for asking you this before checking with her first, but we've been talking about adding some more instruments. Trying to get up a proper bluegrass band, I mean. And I'd love it if you'd play fiddle for us.
I pause for a long time, trying to make sense of what he's saying. My thoughts are all tied up in Jim and Jesse, and his meaning doesn't register at first.
What do you think?
Cedar asks when I don't answer.
You want to play with us?
When I finally realize what he's asking, I gape at him in surprise. A bluegrass band? Just bluegrass?
Just bluegrass,
he says, laughing. I want to say yes. I can't think of anything I'd rather say yes to. But Sarah, I would love to, but Sarah and Orlando and I play together. I can't bail on them. Sarah would murder me in my sleep. He laughs and leans toward me, and I notice his stubble's heavier than usual. He looks like such a cowboy, it's ridiculous. Let's me and you get together and play sometime then.
The two of us?
Why not? That's not much of a band. Sounds more like a date. The moment the word date leaves my mouth, I regret it. I blush to the roots of my hair. When Cedar sees how red my face is, he barely smothers a laugh.
Would that be so bad?
I don't say anything for a while, and Cedar's still got his arm around me, which I have no idea how to respond to. Two drama club girls pass by and shoot us curious looks, and I stare at my shoes. I don't know if they're whispering because of Jesse's arrest or because of whatever is going on between Cedar and me. I hope it's on Cedar's account, because I'm tired of being haunted by whispers in the hallway and cafeteria. Being haunted by a phantom fiddle's bad enough.
So, how about that date?
Cedar says, trying to sound cool, but his voice breaks a little. This time I laugh. We can play together if you want. Sarah and I kissed, but that doesn't mean we're a couple. It doesn't mean I should feel guilty for playing music with Cedar. Especially since Sarah's gone back to ignoring me. If anyone should feel guilty, it's her.
If you really don't want to be alone with me, I'll invite Kenneth.
He looks at me sideways, a smile lingering around his lips. I'll risk it, I say quickly. This isn't how I should be spending my time right now. Not with Jesse in jail and Jim freshly buried. But the thought of a break from all the grief and the worry is too tempting to resist. Tonight?
I'll pick you up. Here, I'll put my number in your phone so you can text me your address.
He says, his hand brushing mine as he takes the phone from me. Where are we going to play?
It'll be a surprise.
He says, before tweaking one of my curls and winking at me. Then he's off down the hallway like it's his stage. What the hell was that? Sarah's voice sounds behind me. I startle and turn around, trying to cover my smile when I spot Orlando and Sarah. But Orlando shakes his head,
Many a girl has fallen for Cedar's country boy charms.
He muses, using the ridiculous accent of a rich plantation owner from a Civil War period movie. But Sarah's not laughing. Are you seriously going behind my back? After I told you I don't want to play with them? She says. Anger and hurt strangle her words. My guilt and embarrassment turn to irritation, making my voice sharp. I didn't go behind your back. He came up to me. She crosses her arms. What were you talking about? On another day, I might enjoy her jealousy. But not now. Not with everything that's going on. It takes all my effort to keep my voice even when I answer. Sarah, I spent all day yesterday fighting with people at Jim's funeral. I don't have the energy for this. I'm so tired of fighting. Especially with you. Her eyes soften. I'm sorry. It's just that you've been so difficult lately, and I've been difficult lately. Me. Are you kidding? You're the one who kissed me and then pretended it never happened. Out of the corner of my eye, I see Orlando flinch. I guess neither of us had the courage to tell him. But I keep my eyes on Sarah. You haven't even tried to be there for me after Jim got killed, or after Jesse got blamed. Sarah flushes, but ignores everything I just said. Were you asking him to play with us? For your information, he was asking me to play with him and Rose. He said they needed a fiddler for a bluegrass band. Sarah looks like I punched her. And what'd you say? She's trying to sound angry, but fear is creeping into her voice now. I told him no. But you know what? Since I've been so difficult lately, I'm going to go find him and tell him I will.
Shady, that's not fair, Orlando says.
No, Sarah speaks over him. If she wants to play with them, let her. That's fine. Now she looks more like she's hugging herself than crossing her arms. She's hurt. Jealous. But she'll never admit it. And her feelings really don't matter right now. Mine do. All my simmering anger at her boils over, and suddenly I'm yelling. God, you're supposed to be my best friend. And you don't even care that my brother is in jail, getting charged for my stepdad's murder. All you care about is that I'm talking to Cedar? Are you serious? It's not my fault Jesse killed your stepdad. She spits back.
Shit,
Orlando mutters. Sarah has always been blunt, but she's never gone this far. She looks as stunned by her words as Orlando is. She opens her mouth like she's going to apologize, but then she closes it again. It wouldn't matter if she apologized anyway, because she meant it. She thinks Jesse's a killer. No kiss can make up for that. My fingertips tingle, longing to slap Sarah's face. I take a step toward her, but Orlando throws an arm between us, his eyes pleading.
She didn't mean it, Shady.
Sarah doesn't say anything. She stands there looking lost, like she doesn't know how she got here. We're done, I say, and stalk away down the hallway, tears gathering in my eyes. By the end of the day, I've mostly managed to put the fight with Sarah out of my mind, and I'm looking forward to seeing Cedar. I wait at the end of the road, my fiddle case in hand. I feel foolish standing on a